Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia, and with me, as always, is the very sweet Jennifer Wollman. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Fernando.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent.
Good, good.
Wonderful. We're breezing through. I got some biscuits with the boss from Ted Lasso in my future. So if I go a little too fast, it's just because
he's hurrying up to get to cafecito.
I'm trying to get to my reward.
Biscuits with the boss.
There you go.
I don't understand that. I'm not a Ted Lasso. I know I brought him for you, but
yeah.
Explain.
But look, at the bottom line is you're very astute, right? Because you know that just like any other animal, you're like, I'm gonna give him a biscuit when he completes a task. That's how you get me to do all this work. So you know, I just have to say, I know what you're doing. Continue doing it. I'm happy to do it. All right. So what are we going to talk about, my friend?
So today, obviously we own our own brokerage and we do a lot of recruiting, and we came across this list of what makes good real estate brokers, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought it would be fun since Teacher Appreciation Day is coming up that we could look at what makes a good real estate agent and why teachers make great real estate agents. And Teacher Appreciation Week is May 5th through May 9th. Mm-hmm. So this episode is a little bit late, but we did think of our teachers, and we do think of our teachers, and we love our teachers.
Right.
And case in point, you are a teacher. But before we get into why teachers make great brokers, let's go through some of the other ones. Some of them are pretty of course. So sales professionals, especially retail, tech, and pharma. And the reason they succeed is because they have strong persuasion and negotiation skills. They have great comfort with prospecting and rejection, which is our number one kind of theme in life, prospect and be okay with the no's. They have goal-oriented mindset, and they have great experience if they're good ones at managing a pipeline, which is our lifeblood to continuing to exist. Then customer service representatives, they succeed because they have exceptional people skills and patience, the ability to resolve conflicts and handle emotional situations, and the natural ability to build trust and rapport. And I would like to say that I think customer service is pretty much at the heart of everything that we do, right? Because every interaction that we have to excel at not only that trust and the rapport, but that's what keeps the relationship going, right? Is by having that great customer service. And then teachers, and why they succeed is because they have excellent communication skills. They're educators, so they're used to teaching people about processes and concepts, and they're skilled at breaking down complex concepts. They're organized and good at managing multiple responsibilities, and they're natural nurturers who build lasting relationships.
Absolutely. Well, I will admit to a bias, right? Because I was a teacher for 10 years in the county public schools, and then I'm married to a teacher. My oldest daughter is studying to be a teacher. There seems to be, you know, just teacher in the ether of my life. And we have a couple of agents that are teachers that are doing tremendously, you know, well. So
yes, shout out to Mabel Quintana in Tampa.
Shout out to Mabel Quintana in Tampa, who's killing it. And, you know, she's got that drive. And there is a lot that I attribute to the profession of teaching for allowing me to be successful in this career. And I know plenty of teachers that have gone on to have second careers in different sectors, different industries, and have done extremely well. But yeah, there are certain things that you train on. And I'm not even talking about the training that you get in your formal education to become a teacher. I'm talking about the training that you get when you are actually working in a school. If you're okay with that, you know, let's break down. So strong communication is a big aspect of this. And one of the things, it would be a very direct connection for you to say, well, a teacher has to, if you're a science teacher, for example, you have to explain some things that are very complex to children of all ages, right? If you're in a middle school and you're in seventh grade, you got to teach to that age. You got to make sure that you are clear in the way that you are, you know, providing that information. But what I think a big part of this strong communication aspect is you got to look at who are all the stakeholders that a teacher interacts with in their life, in their day to day. Obviously, their number one people that they interact with are the kids that are in the classroom. They also have to interact with the adults that are outside of the school, which are the parents, right? But you also have to now interact with the administration within the school. And so a lot of times when you're having meetings where all of the stakeholders are in one place, you know, and the way that you communicate has to be very well crafted to address all of the needs and wants of every single stakeholder that is in those meetings. You know, so it is an interesting thing that you do develop sort of like a bit of a sixth sense of knowing what to say, when to say it, how to approach that. Those things become important. Something that happens in education that's really interesting, and you know, when I got into it, I had a conversation with someone that kind of became a bit of a mentor for me. And he was actually a counselor in the middle school, but a very brilliant guy, Dr. Pareda. And we, you know, what I really loved about our conversations is, you know, he used to say, well, it takes about 3 to 4 years for you to really begin to be a teacher. And he was absolutely right, because, you know, at first, it's such a foreign idea. You know, you get your degree, now you're walking in, you start, you know, teaching. You're working on your planning lessons. You're trying to check off all of the regulatory aspects of your work that you need to do. And there's also a creative aspect of actually doing the lesson, developing a relationship with the students, getting to know all that stuff. When you get to your third or fourth year, you begin to have control over that domain. And then from there on, it's when you really get to unfold your full creativity, your full power, your full knowledge, because, you know, you need to build up, you know, that experience. And so it's really interesting how then when you move into another industry, you are kind of programmed to approach it in the same way. You're programmed into creating these kind of lesson plans, to creating this methodical approach of going around it. You also have the patience to understand that it's going to take time. Right. And you also know very clearly that it's about building relationships, you know, and so a lot of that you learn just by being a teacher in the school system.
So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah. Please.
So if you had to do a lesson plan for commercial brokerage, for a teacher going into commercial brokerage, right, and let's say they have something specific, they're going to specialize in industrial.
Okay.
What would your lesson plan look like? Because to your point, you were saying it takes probably 3 to 4 years, right? It's probably similar in commercial. Not that it's going to take that long to get a deal, but to get in your stride, right, and find your niche and everything. What would a lesson plan for a new agent starting out look like?
So at the start of every lesson plan, there's something called a, and I forget the technical term for it, but you do something at the beginning of every class that is going to grab the student's attention. And please forgive me and my FIU education department, because but it does have a technical name, but it is something that you do at the beginning to capture the attention. And it's not unlike when you and I go to a conference and we hear a speaker, they're trying to do something at the beginning that is going to capture people's attention. So what I would do in a lesson plan like that is, number one, is I would do a tour of an industrial space. Right? Because that is, you know, the attention grabbing. And then what I found to be very important for me when I was trying to transition is, teachers come from this track where I had to go to school, get a degree, then get my state license before I was in the classroom to start teaching. Right? Well, it doesn't take me that long to get a real estate license. And now I'm here, but I feel ill prepared because I didn't go through any formal education, any formal schooling. So you want to have as much information as possible. And I think teachers are very good at organizing the information. So you don't want to necessarily, for a teacher, if you're building a lesson plan for a teacher, you don't want to necessarily, and I think we naturally are not these kind of people, but you don't want to dumb it down. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to throw all of the aspects on it, because I think a teacher will naturally find an angle to say, okay, how do I organize this information? What really is the most important thing here? What's the most important thing there? And you want to do a lot of Q&A. You want to go through what we used to call, you know, higher order thinking skills. You know, you want to get to a place where you're in analysis, you're in synthesis, you know, you're in evaluation, and you want to build up to that. So your questions have to kind of build up until you get to that place, so that the recognition or the knowledge is self-gained, meaning that they come through it by interacting with it and by having to answer those questions, rather than by just giving them the information and saying, this is how we do things. I find that, you know, most practitioners, if you tell them the what, the percentage of people that will adopt it, it's very small. If you tell them the why, and then you give them the what, that absorption rate or that the rate by which that adoption rate is higher. That's the way that I would create it. The flip side to that is that it takes a little longer, because they want to analyze a lot of information before they get going. But once they get going, once they turn their first deal or second deal, they're going to go through a series of realizations. That's how I feel about Mabel. Like every time that you're sharing with me her evolution, you know, it's incredible, because I see a lot of myself in her, in that, you know, once she got the taste and she understood, oh, this is how this works, then she just figured it out. Another thing that happens is teachers have to learn to be very good at interruptions. So you have every plan and you create your lesson plans and you have this plan for the day. A million things happen in one day. And you have to adjust to, I'm getting interrupted. I have to get back and redirect the attention of everybody back to what we're working on, while addressing whatever the interruption is, whether it's an announcement or it's a fire drill, there's a hurricane coming, they might close the school tomorrow. You know, there's a million things that happen. You know, new students come into your classroom in the middle of the year, somebody's asking for a parent-teacher conference. You get bombarded with so much stuff, and you have to be very adept at moving the ball forward and focusing on the thing that is most important, which is the eyeballs that are in front of you in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And most successful teachers, what they were really good at is, when they closed that door, they were only focusing on the thing that they could control. Anything outside of that door, they saw it as, it's completely outside of my control, but this classroom is my domain. And the experience that those kids are going to have while they're with me for the 1 or 2 hours that they're in my classroom, I have total control, whether it's going to be a good experience, whether it's going to be an educational experience, where they're really going to get something out of it. And so teachers are very good at understanding what is within their control, and then focusing on that to get to the end in mind. And they're very good at ignoring the noise. And I think that it takes a time for them to transition those skills to what we do. But once they do, they realize, oh yeah, I know how to do this.
Right.
I know how to focus on the things that I can control. I know how to ignore the things that are just noise and not give it value and not give it attention and just kind of, you know, guide myself on other stuff. And if they have a good partner in, you know, in a good broker that is a good partner to them, where they can call you, you know, you notice, again, I go back to Mabel, but Mabel is a person that she would call you, you would teach her, you wouldn't have to teach the lesson again.
Right. No, no.
Because she would feel, okay, I'm supported. Now I feel emboldened to do it because, you know, it's in line with what I was thinking, but I just got the reinforcement and now I'm able to do it. And if my focus and my mindset is on the right thing, which is to serve people and to do that well, so it's a really interesting endeavor. So if you look at that list that we were looking at, time management, definitely, it's a big part of our job. It's mm-hmm. a big part of the day-to-day of a teacher. The teacher gets a curriculum they have to get from point A to Z all within that year. They have to deal with the interruptions. They have 187 days to do it, right? And provided that there's no days that, hurricane days that don't get replaced. And so they're very good at planning for the year, planning for the quarter, planning for the month, planning for the week, planning for the day, planning for the hour, all right? And I'm talking about, you know, elementary school teachers are very good at planning for the hour, for example. And this is something that practitioners that do very well, as you know, have to be very good managers of their time. So they're very good at that. And I would say the last thing that is on this list, but I think is a very important, is about empathy and patience. I used to joke around with my kids about you always would find ways to create humor and to have really the kind of experience that you would have wanted when you were a student, you know. And I would tell you that most teachers, they had a role model in a teacher that they had earlier in their life that they want to emulate. And they can't 100% emulate that person, but they can try to recreate that experience that they had, that feeling that they had when they were in those classrooms. And when you're teaching, you learn so much about patience, you learn so much about empathy, and you also learn very quickly that you don't understand everything that's happening in a person's life. And, you know, so those things, you know, they kind of stay with you.
Yeah, and they help transfer over to a deal, right?
For sure.
Because you never know when you're doing a transaction, what's going on with anybody else, what's going on
Correct.
With the buyer or the seller or the tenant or the landlord or the other broker, et cetera. So keeping that in mind. And then, you know, brokers are constantly teaching, whether it's their agents or their clients or the steps that they need to take, or the lender, you know, telling the story of the deal to the lender to try to get that done.
Yeah.
So constantly educating. So it makes sense that.
Yeah. But also understanding, like, just being able to understand where somebody else is coming from, whether you agree with them or you don't agree with them, but just really understanding what is happening in their life that is affecting their behavior. You know, those things become very important. And then you learn, there are so many things that I learned about human behavior through teaching that I think are very important. And one of the best lessons I ever learned was I had this student who was in middle school. He was taller than everybody else. He was larger than life in his personality, kept getting in trouble with every teacher, you know, and even in my classroom. And what I knew was that I didn't know everything. And I went to this teacher who actually became a friend. Her name was Nina Galler and Frances Arango. Shout out to them from Rockwood Middle School. Nina taught home ec. And by the way, I think it's a crime for some of the, like, home ec and auto body shop, wood shop. I think it's a crime that those things are not.
I agree.
Because, we grew up with
them.
Those are life skills. You learn so much. And some of those teachers were some of the best teachers to teach you about just life. And I remember Nina told me that, give him responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, other teachers would have been like, you know, write him up, send them down to the principal, give him a detention. And I think that that's where everybody was going. And I was like, well, he's not getting along. He's trying to push the boundaries with me. And what she explained to me was, well, he's a leader. He's a natural born leader, but he doesn't have power or control, right? And he's also smarter than people give him credit for. He finishes the work quickly. And if he doesn't do a good job with the work, it's because he's uninterested, not because he's not smart. Mm-hmm. And she says, like, when he finishes the work, he's always going to finish before anybody else. And he's going to tell you.
And then he's going to get bored.
He's going to start. So give him responsibility. So man, I started doing that. I need you to go down to the office. I need to do this. I need to do that. I need you to do this. And he would come. He would do the work. He would do A-level work, but he would finish true to what she told me, faster than anybody else. He would help me with the filing. He would help me with this. We took a trip to Washington, D.C. for, what's that program? I forget the name of the program. Close Up. There you go, Close Up.
Thanks, Jessica. Close Up.
Thank you, Jessica, again, for the save. And he was one of our group leaders and all that stuff. And I just wonderfully got along. And that's when I realized, like, oh my God, this is a total different ball game. Like, these kids are all dealing with their own thing, you know, and you got 27, 30, 35. And one time I had 39 kids in a classroom. Mm-hmm. This is before there were limits to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got 39 islands, 39 human beings, 39 individuals. And so, you know, maneuvering that it's a very interesting and it's just a great training ground for anything else that you decide to do in the future. And I believe, and again, I'm biased, it's a great training ground if you decide that you want to, you know, sell real estate.
Well, I think you brought up an interesting point that this teacher had the ability to spot a person's, this boy's strength and what his driver and his motivator was. And I think it's interesting because we use the DISC assessment to do the same, right? Yeah. Not just for our agents, but to educate our agents on how to identify different personality types so that you know when you're presenting to a landlord or a tenant or a buyer, a seller, investor, whatever, you can kind of try to figure out based on their mannerisms and how they act, how you need to communicate with them to best get your information across. Right. And I think that we've really lost that skill of being able, you know, because everything's so much is done through emails. I mean, I remember old school when we used to go and when there was an offer being made for sale or purchase, we would go and we would present it and the other broker would be in the room and the attorney and sometimes the seller or the seller's agent or the seller's rep. And I would present that offer. I would present that lease. I would put in person, right? And now it's like, emailed you know, the lease.
I find it interesting because we've been in rooms where people are talking about how agents and how clients communicate with you. And for example, there are people that like texting. There are people that like the phone call. There are people that just, you know, send me an email. But I do find that there are some of us in this industry where we're like, no, I send you an email. Well, he keeps replying to your email by text.
Right.
They're trying to send you a message.
They're telling you, I
this,
want text.
This is the communication that I want. And so don't fight against it. And another thing that I find really interesting in education is that if you remove your ego from it, there are really interesting things that you find out about where you could be the most effective. So I'll give you one example. I know we're coming to the end here, but Dr. Pareda, I had a conversation with him where I had these two classes. They were the same subject, similar number of kids, same caliber of talent in the classroom. But one class was early in the day and one class was at the end of the day. I taught the lesson the same way. We did the same activities. I gave them an assessment, a test. The morning class did extremely well. The afternoon class was terrible. And I would always evaluate that if there was a test where, like, for example, if you give a test to 30 people and the majority of them fail, they didn't fail. You failed as a teacher. You didn't educate. You didn't teach right. Something went wrong. So I would go and I would do, this is obviously, I've always been a nerd. So I would do this, you know, I would do the S-curve. I would do basically a statistical analysis of the test. And then I would come to Dr. Pareda and I would sit down with him. And I said, I don't get it. Like, I'm teaching the same way. It's the same number of students, the same classroom, same location, all stuff. And then he was like, yeah, but you're not taking into account these kids in the morning, fresh, paying attention. You're the first class.
They're excited.
They're excited, all of the stuff. The afternoon, they probably just had lunch before they come to see you because you're in the last period. Some of them have lunch right before they see you. You know, and then he started talking to me about how you got 13 and 14 year olds that are going through this hormonal change in their life. Their brain kind of shuts down because the body needs to create the hormones. There's so much that is working in the body that, you know, and I don't know if you know this, teenagers' brains do shut down. Mm-hmm. For periods of, for years.
Years, yeah.
And then they recuperate and they're like, oh, energy is coming back to my brain. I can do this. So, but I always found that entire thing. And it's the same thing why I found the work that we do so exciting because, you know, there's always a different way, a different angle to look at it. And as long as you get your ego out of the way and it's all about the work and about making it better, you learn so much about how to actually, you know, make things that you get to a point where you get to make very quick decisions and you get to really tweak and always look for the angles of why is this working, why isn't it working? And you just get better. You get better year over year. And I think, again, to the point of this podcast, I think teachers are always adept at looking at that. And I saw, you know, I work with amazing teachers in the public school system. When I was in middle school and in high school, when I taught at Rockway Middle School and at Coral Park Senior High School, and even at Filer Middle School, which is where I got started in Hialeah. And I would tell you that there are some exceptional professionals in public schools that are, you know, just as nerdy as I was doing the work. And they were just, you know, they were just tremendous. So, you know, kudos to public school teachers. I'm glad that we're doing this. I know we're a week late or so, but I'm glad that we are, honoring them. It's an incredible profession and it's incredibly invaluable. And I will say one thing, because people always ask me, I spent my first 10 years out of college teaching. And I've thought about it too. What if I would have started in real estate right away, all those things. But there's one thing that people could never take away from you. Number one is your education. And number two is your experience. That experience was tremendous. My relationship with those students, right now they're married, they have kids, they have great jobs, they're excelling. We connect through Facebook. It's a wonderful thing to see. And even when I see them around town, I mean, it's just an amazing and incredible experience. And I don't think that I know that that's an experience that money can't buy. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Thank you for getting me down this.
Yeah, thank you for taking me down your memory lane and connecting the dots on
absolutely
teaching and the important aspects of what we do, brokering, yeah, and how we educate everybody
now,
as well.
What I do find interesting for those of you who are listening is a lot of the people that are in the real estate industry come from this is their secondary profession, or they started this part-time and then they went into it full-time, but they come from a variety of industries. So what is it that you learn in your past profession, something that you did in your formal schooling that it's not necessarily directly connected to real estate, but please share with us. Let us know what it is that you feel has been a bit of your secret sauce coming from another industry into this industry. And as always, thank you guys for listening to us. On behalf of the sweetest partner in life, Jennifer Woolman, I'm getting ready for my biscuits, as you could hear by my voice. And thank you guys for joining us. Till next time. Bye. Jennifer,
bye.
If you don't say bye, all right, thank you.